In that time, Celebrimbor, the son of Curufin, repudiated the deeds of his father and remained in Nargothrond. Yet Huan followed still the horse of Celegorm, his master. Northward they rode, for they intended in their haste to pass through Dimbar and along the north marches of Doriath, seeking the swiftest road to Himring, where Maedhros their brother dwelt. And still they might hope with speed to traverse it, since it lay close to Doriath's borders, shunning Nan Dungortheb and the distant menace of the Mountains of Terror. Now it is told that Beren and Luthien came in their wandering into the forest of Brethil, and drew near at last to the borders of Doriath. Then Beren took thought of his vow, and against his heart he resolved, when Luthien was come again within the safety of her own land, to set forth once more. But she was not willing to be parted from him again, saying, "You must choose, Beren, between these two, to relinquish the quest and your oath and seek a life of wandering upon the face of the earth, or to hold to your word and challenge the power of darkness upon its throne, but on either road I shall go with you, and our doom shall be alike." Even as they spoke together of these things, walking without heed of aught else, Celegorm and Curufin rode up, hastening through the forest, and the brothers espied them and knew them from afar. Then Celegorm turned his horse and spurred it upon Beren, purposing to ride him down. But Curufin, swerving, stooped and lifted Luthien to his saddle, for he was a strong and cunning horseman. Then Beren sprang from before Celegorm full upon the speeding horse of Curufin that had passed him. And the leap of Beren is renowned among men and elves. He took Curufin by the throat from behind and hurled him backward, and they fell to the ground together. The horse reared and fell, but Luthien was flung aside and lay upon the grass. Then Beren throttled Curufin, but death was near him, for Celegorm rode upon him with a spear. In that hour Huan forsook the service of Celegorm and sprang upon him, so that his horse swerved aside and would not approach Beren because of the terror of the great hound. Celegorm cursed both hound and horse, but Huan was unmoved. Then Luthien, rising, forbade the slaying of Curufin, but Beren despoiled him of his gear and weapons and took his knife, Angrist. That knife was made by Telchar of Nogrod and hung sheathless by his side. Iron it would cleave as if it were green wood. Then Beren, lifting Curufin, flung him from him, and bade him walk now back to his noble kinsfolk, who might teach him to turn his valour to worthier use. "Your horse," he said, "I keep for the service of Luthien, and it may be accounted happy to be free of such a master." Then Curufin cursed Beren under cloud and sky. "Go hence," he said, "unto a swift and bitter death." Celegorm took him beside him on his horse, and the brothers made then as if to ride away. And Beren turned away and took no heed of their words. But Curufin, being filled with shame and malice, took the bow of Celegorm and shot back as they went, and the arrow was aimed at Luthien. Huan, leaping, caught it in his mouth. But Curufin shot again, and Beren sprang before Luthien, and the dart smote him in the breast. It is told that Huan pursued the sons of Feanor, and they fled in fear, and returning he brought to Luthien a herb out of the forest. With that leaf she staunched Beren's wound, and by her arts and by her love she healed him. And thus at last they returned to Doriath. There Beren, being torn between his oath and his love, and knowing Luthien to be now safe, arose one morning before the sun and committed her to the care of Huan. Then in great anguish he departed while she yet slept upon the grass. He rode northward again with all speed to the pass of Sirion, and coming to the skirts of Tower Nufuin, He looked out across the waste of Angfauglith and saw afar the peaks of Thangorodrim. There he dismissed the horse of Curufin and bade it leave now dread and servitude and run free upon the green grass in the lands of Sirion. Then, being now alone and upon the threshold of the final peril, he made the song of parting in praise of Luthien and the lights of heaven, for he believed that he must now say farewell to both love and light. Of that song, these words were part. Farewell, sweet earth and northern sky, forever blessed since here did lie, and here with lissome limbs did run, beneath the moon, beneath the sun, Luthien to Nuviel. More fair than mortal tongue can tell. The wall to ruin fell the world, and were dissolved and backward hurled, unmade into the old abyss. Yet were its making good for this, the dusk, the dawn, the earth, the sea, that Luthien for a time should be. And he sang aloud, caring not what ear should overhear him, for he was desperate and looked for no escape. But Luthien heard his song, and she sang in answer as she came through the woods unlooked for. For Huan, consenting once more to be her steed, had borne her swiftly hard upon Beren's trail. Long he had pondered in his heart what counsel he could devise for the lightening of the peril of these two whom he loved. He turned aside, therefore, at Sauron's isle as they ran northward again, and he took thence the ghastly Wulfheim of Draugluin and the Batfell of Thuringwethil. She was the messenger of Sauron, and was wont to fly in vampire's form to Angband, and her great fingered wings were barbed at each joint's end with an iron claw. Clad in these dreadful garments, Huan and Luthien ran through Tawr Nufuin, and all things fled before them. Beren, seeing their approach, was dismayed, and he wondered, for he had heard the voice of Tinuviel, and he thought it now a phantom for his ensnaring. But they halted and cast aside their disguise, and Luthien ran towards him. Thus Beren and Luthien met again between the desert and the wood. For a while he was silent and was glad, but after a space he strove once more to dissuade Luthien from her journey. "Thrice now I curse my oath to Thingol," he said, "and I would that he had slain me in Menegroth, rather than I should bring you under the shadow of Morgoth." Then for the second time Huan spoke with words. And he counseled Beren, saying, "From the shadow of death you can no longer save Luthien, for by her love she is now subject to it. You can turn from your fate and lead her into exile, seeking peace in vain while your life lasts. But if you will not deny your doom, then either Luthien, being forsaken, must assuredly die alone, or she must with you challenge the fate that lies before you. Hopeless, yet not certain. Further counsel I cannot give, nor may I go further on your road. But my heart forebodes that what you find at the gate I shall myself see. All else is dark to me. Yet it may be that our three paths lead back to Doriath, and we may yet meet before the end." Then Beren perceived that Luthien could not be divided from the doom that lay upon them both, and he sought no longer to dissuade her. By the counsel of Huan and the arts of Luthien, he was arrayed now in the haim of Draugluin, and she in the winged fell of Thuringwethil. Beren became in all things like a werewolf to look upon, save that in his eyes there shone a spirit grim indeed, but clean. And horror was in his glance as he saw upon his flank a bat-like creature clinging with creased wings. Then, howling under the moon, he leapt down the hill, and the bat wheeled and flitted above him. They passed through all perils until they came with the dust of their long and weary road upon them to to the drear dale that lay before the gate of Angband. Black chasms opened beside the road, whence forms as of writhing serpents issued. On either hand the cliffs stood as embattled walls, and upon them sat carrion fowl, crying with fell voices. Before them was the impregnable gate, an arch wide and dark at the foot of the mountain. Above it reared 1,000 feet of precipice. There dismay took them, for at the gate was a guard of whom no tidings had yet gone forth. Rumour of he knew not what designs abroad among the princes of the elves had come to Morgoth, and ever down the aisles of the forest was heard the baying of Huon, the great hound of war whom long ago the Valar unleashed. Then Morgoth recalled the doom of Huon, and he chose one from among the whelps of the race of Draugluin, and he fed him with his own hand upon living flesh, and put his power upon him. Swiftly the wolf grew, until he could creep into no den, but lay huge and hungry before the feet of Morgoth. There the fire and anguish of hell entered into him, and he became filled with a devouring spirit, tormented, terrible, and strong. Carcharoth, the Red Maw, he is named in the tales of those days, and Anfauglir, the Jaws of Thirst. And Morgoth set him to lie unsleeping before the doors of Angband, lest Huon come. Now Carcharoth espied them from afar, and he was filled with doubt. For news had long been brought to Angband that Draugluin was dead. Therefore, when they approached, he denied them entry and bade them stand, and he drew near with menace, scenting something strange in the air about them. But suddenly some power descended from of old from divine race possessed Luthien, and casting back her foul raiment she stood forth, small before the might of Carcharoth, but radiant and terrible. Lifting up her hand, she commanded him to sleep, saying, "O woe-begotten spirit, fall now into dark oblivion, and forget for a while the dreadful doom of life." And Carcharoth was felled, as though lightning had smitten him. Then Beren and Luthien went through the gate, and down the labyrinthine stairs, and together wrought the greatest deed that has been dared by elves or men. For they came to the seat of Morgoth in his nethermost hall, that was upheld by horror, lit by fire, and filled with weapons of death and torment. There Beren slunk in wolf's form beneath his throne, but Luthien was stripped of her disguise by the will of Morgoth, and he bent his gaze upon her. She was not daunted by his eyes, and she named her own name and offered her service to sing before him after the manner of a minstrel. Then Morgoth, looking upon her beauty, conceived in his thought an evil lust, and a design more dark than any that had yet come into his heart since he fled from Valinor. Thus he was beguiled by his own malice, for he watched her, leaving her free for a while, and taking secret pleasure in his thought. Then suddenly she eluded his sight, and out of the shadows began a song of such surpassing loveliness, and of such blinding power, that he listened perforce. And a blindness came upon him, as his eyes roamed to and fro, seeking her. All his court were cast down in slumber, and all the fires faded and were quenched. But the Silmarils in the crown on Morgoth's head blazed forth suddenly with a radiance of white flame, and the burden of that crown and of the jewels bowed down his head, as though the world was set upon it, laden with a weight of care, of fear, and of desire, that even the will of Morgoth could not support. Then Luthien, catching up her winged robe, sprang into the air, and her voice came dropping down like rain into pools, profound and dark. She cast her cloak before his eyes, and set upon him a dream dark as the outer void, where once he walked alone. Suddenly he fell, as a hill sliding in avalanche, and hurled like thunder from his throne, lay prone upon the floors of hell, The iron crown rolled echoing from his head. All things were still. As a dead beast, Beren lay upon the ground. But Luthien, touching him with a hand, aroused him, and he cast aside the wolfhame. Then he drew forth the knife Angrist, and from the iron claws that held it, he cut a Silmaril. As he closed it in his hand, the radiance welled through his living flesh, and his hand became as a shining lamp. But the jewel suffered his touch and hurt him not. It came then into Beren's mind that he would go beyond his vow and bear out of Angband all three of the jewels of Feanor. But such was not the doom of the Silmarils. The knife Angrist snapped, and a shard of the blade flying smote the cheek of Morgoth. He groaned and stirred, and all the host of Angband moved in sleep. Then terror fell upon Beren and Luthien, and they fled, heedless and without disguise, desiring only to see the light once more. They were neither hindered nor pursued, but the gate was held against their going out. For Karkaroth had arisen from sleep, and stood now in wrath upon the threshold of Angband. Before they were aware of him, he saw them, and sprang upon them as they ran. Luthien was spent, and she had not time nor strength to quell the wolf, but Beren strode forth before her, and in his right hand he held aloft the Silmaril. Karkaroth halted, and for a moment he was afraid. "Get you gone and fly," cried Beren, "for here is a fire that shall consume you and all evil things." And he thrust the Silmaril before the eyes of the wolf. But Karkaroth looked upon that holy jewel and was not daunted, and the devouring spirit within him awoke to sudden fire, and gaping, he took suddenly the hand within his jaws, and he bit it off at the wrist. Then swiftly, all his innards were filled with a flame of anguish, and the Silmaril seared his accursed flesh. Howling, he fled before them, and the walls of the valley of the gate echoed with the clamour of his torment. So terrible did he become in his madness that all the creatures of Morgoth that abode in that valley, or were upon any of the roads that led thither, fled far away. For he slew all living things that stood in his path, and burst from the north with ruin upon the world. Of all the terrors that came ever into Beleriand ere Angband's fall, the madness of Karkaroth was the most dreadful, for the power of the Silmaril was hidden within him. Now Beren lay in a swoon within the perilous gate, and death drew nigh him, for there was venom on the fangs of the wolf. Luthien, with her lips, drew out the venom, and she put forth her failing power to staunch the hideous wound. But behind her, in the depths of Angband, the rumour grew of great wrath aroused. The hosts of Morgoth were awakened. Thus the quest of the Silmaril was like to have ended in ruin and despair. But in that hour, above the wall of the valley, three mighty birds appeared, flying northward with wings swifter than the wind. Among all birds and beasts, the wandering and need of Beren had been noised, and Huan himself had bidden all things watch, that they might bring him aid. High above the realm of Morgoth, Thorondor and his vassals soared, and seeing now the madness of the wolf and Beren's fall, they came swiftly down, even as the powers of Angband were released from the toils of sleep. Then they lifted up Luthien and Beren from the earth, and bore them aloft into the clouds. Below them, suddenly, thunder rolled, lightnings leapt upward, and the mountains quaked. Fire and smoke belched forth from Thangorodrim, and flaming bolts were hurled far abroad, falling ruinous upon the lands, and the Noldor in Hithlum trembled. But Thorondor took his way far above the earth, seeking the high roads of heaven, where the sun day-long shines unveiled, and the moon walks amid the cloudless stars. Thus they passed swiftly over Dor nu Fauglith, and over Tower nu Fuin, and came above the hidden valley of Tum Laden. No cloud nor mist lay there, and looking down, Luthien saw far below, as a white light starting from a green jewel, the radiance of Gondolin the Fair, where Turgon dwelt. But she wept, for she thought that Beren would surely die. He spoke no word, nor opened his eyes, and knew thereafter nothing of his flight. And at last the eagles set them down upon the borders of Doriath, and they were come to that same dell whence Beren had stolen in despair and left Luthien asleep. There the eagles laid her at Beren's side and returned to the peaks of Chrysagrim and their high eyries. But Huan came to her, and together they tended Beren, even as before when she healed him of the wound that Curufin gave to him. But this wound was fell and poisonous. Long Beren lay, and his spirit wandered upon the dark borders of death, knowing ever an anguish that pursued him from dream to dream. Then suddenly, when her hope was almost spent, he woke again, and looked up, seeing leaves against the sky. And he heard beneath the leaves singing soft and slow beside him, Luthien Tinuviel. And it was spring again. Thereafter Beren was named Echamian, which is the one-handed, and suffering was graven in his face. But at last he was drawn back to life by the love of Luthien, and he arose, and together they walked in the woods once more. And they did not hasten from that place, for it seemed fair to them. Luthien indeed was willing to wander in the wild without returning, forgetting house and people and all the glory of the elf kingdoms, and for a time Beren was content. But he could not for long forget his oath to return to Menigroth, nor would he withhold Luthien from Thingol forever. For he held by the lore of men, deeming it perilous to set at naught the will of the Father, save at the last need. And it seemed also to him unfit that one so royal and fair as Luthien should live always in the woods, as the rude hunters among men, without home or honour or the fair things which are the delight of the queens of the Eldalia. Therefore, after a while, he persuaded her, and their footsteps forsook the houseless lands. And he passed into Doriath, leading Luthien home. So their doom willed it. Upon Doriath evil days had fallen. Grief and silence had come upon all its people when Luthien was lost. Long they had sought for her in vain. And it is told that in that time Daeron the minstrel of Thingol strayed from the land and was seen no more. He it was that made music for the dance and song of Luthien before Beren came to Doriath, and he had loved her and set all his thought of her in his music. He became the greatest of all the minstrels of the elves east of the sea, named even before Maglor, son of Feanor. But seeking for Luthien in despair, he wandered upon strange paths, and passing over the mountains he came into the east of Middle-earth, where for many ages he made lament beside dark waters for Luthien, daughter of Thingol, most beautiful of all living things. In that time, Thingol turned to Melian, but now she withheld her counsel from him, saying that the doom that he had devised must work to its appointed end, and that he must wait now upon time. But Thingol learned that Luthien had journeyed far from Doriath, for messages came secretly from Celegorm, as has been told, saying that Felagund was dead, and Beren was dead, but Luthien was in Nargothrond, and that Celegorm would wed her. Then Thingol was wrathful, and he sent forth spies, thinking to make war upon Nargothrond. And thus he learned that Luthien was again fled, and that Celegorm and Curufin were driven from Nargothrond. Then his counsel was in doubt, for he had not the strength to assail the seven sons of Feanor. But he sent messengers to Himring to summon their aid in seeking for Luthien, since Celegorm had not sent her to the house of her father, nor had he kept her safely. But in the north of his realm, his messengers met with a peril sudden and unlooked for, the onslaught of Carcharoth, the wolf of Angband. In his madness he had run ravening from the north, and passing at length over Tower Nufuin, upon its eastern side, he came down from the sources of Esgalduin like a destroying fire. Nothing hindered him, and the might of Melian upon the borders of the land stayed him not. For fate drove him, and the power of the Silmaril that he bore to his torment. Thus he burst into the inviolate woods of Doriath, and all fled away in fear. Alone of the messengers, Mablung, chief captain of the king, escaped, and he brought the dread tidings to Thingol. Even in that dark hour, Beren and Luthien returned, hastening from the west, and the news of their coming went before them like a sound of music borne by the wind into dark houses where men sit sorrowful. They came at last to the gates of Menigroth, and a great host followed them. Then Beren led Luthien before the throne of Thingol, her father, and he looked in wonder upon Beren, whom he had thought dead. But he loved him not because of the woes that he had brought upon Doriath. But Beren knelt before him and said, "I return according to my word. I am come now to claim my own." And Thingol answered, "What of your quest and of your vow?" But Beren said, "It is fulfilled. Even now a Silmaril is in my hand." Then Thingol said, "Show it to me." And Beren put forth his left hand, slowly opening its fingers, but it was empty. Then he held up his right arm, and from that hour he named himself Camlost, the empty-handed. Then Thingol's mood was softened, and Beren sat before his throne upon the left, and Luthien upon the right, and they told all the tale of the quest, while all there listened and were filled with amazement. And it seemed to Thingol that this man was unlike all other mortal men, and among the great in ardour and the love of Luthien, a thing new and strange. And he perceived that their doom might not be withstood by any power of the world. Therefore, at the last, he yielded his will, and Beren took the hand of Luthien before the throne of her father. But now a shadow fell upon the joy of Doriath at the return of Luthien the Fair. For learning of the cause of the madness of Carcharoth, the people grew the more afraid, perceiving that his danger was fraught with dreadful power because of the holy jewel, and hardly might be overthrown. And Beren, hearing of the onslaught of the wolf, understood that the quest was not yet fulfilled. Therefore, since daily Carcharoth drew nearer to Menigroth, they prepared the hunting of the wolf. Of all pursuits of beasts whereof tales tell the most perilous. To that chase went Huan the Hound of Valinor, and Mablung of the Heavy Hand, and Beleg Strongbow, and Beren Echamian, and Thingol, king of Doriath. They rode forth in the morning and passed over the river Esgalduin, but Luthien remained behind at the gates of Menigroth. A dark shadow fell upon her, and it seemed to her that the sun had sickened and turned black. The hunters turned east and north, and following the course of the river, they came at last upon Carcharoth the Wolf, in a dark valley down the northern side whereof, Esgalduin fell in a torrent over steep falls. At the foot of the falls, Carcharoth drank to ease his consuming thirst, and he howled, and thus they were aware of him. But he, espying their approach, rushed not suddenly to attack them. It may be that the devil's cunning of his heart awoke, being for a moment eased of his pain by the sweet waters of Esgalduin. and even as they rode towards him, he slunk aside into a deep brake, and there lay hid. But they set a guard about all that place, and waited, and the shadows grew long in the forest. Beren stood beside Thingol, and suddenly they were aware that Huon had left their side. Then a great baying awoke in the thicket, for Huon, becoming impatient and desiring to look upon this wolf, had gone in alone to dislodge him. But Karkaroth avoided him, and bursting from the thorns, leapt suddenly upon Thingol. Swiftly Beren strode before him with a spear, but Karkaroth swept it aside and felled him, biting at his breast. In that moment, Huon leapt from the thicket upon the back of the wolf, and they fell together fighting bitterly. And no battle of wolf and hound has been like to it, for in the baying of Huon was heard the voice of the horns of Orome and the wrath of the Valar. But in the howls of Karkaroth was the hate of Morgoth and malice crueler than teeth of steel. And the rocks were rent by their clamour and fell from on high and choked the falls of Ezgalduin. There they fought to the death. But Thingol gave no heed, for he knelt by Beren, seeing that he was sorely hurt. Huon in that hour slew Karkaroth. But there in the woven woods of Doriath his own doom, long spoken, was fulfilled, and he was wounded mortally, and the venom of Morgoth entered into him. Then he came, and falling beside Beren, spoke for the third time with words. And he bade Beren farewell before he died. Beren spoke not, but laid his hand upon the head of the hound, and so they parted. Mablung and Beleg came hastening to the king's aid, but when they looked upon what was done, they cast aside their spears and wept. Then Mablung took a knife, and ripped up the belly of the wolf, and within he was well nigh all consumed as with a fire. But the hand of Beren that held the jewel was yet incorrupt. But when Mablung reached forth to touch it, the hand was no more, and the Silmaril lay there unveiled, and the light of it filled the shadows of the forest all about them. Then quickly and in fear, Mablung took it and set it in Beren's living hand, and Beren was aroused by the touch of the Silmaril, and held it aloft, and bade Thingol receive it. "Now is the quest achieved," he said, "and my doom full wrought." And he spoke no more. They bore back Beren Camlost, son of Barahir, upon a bier of branches, with Huon the wolfhound at his side. And night fell ere they returned to Menegroth. At the feet of Hirilorn the great beech, Luthien met them walking slow, and some bore torches beside the bier. There she set her arms about Beren, and kissed him, bidding him await her beyond the western sea. And he looked upon her eyes ere the spirit left him. But the starlight was quenched, and darkness had fallen even upon Luthien Tenuvial. Thus ended the quest of the Silmaril. But the lay of Lethian, release from bondage, does not end. For the spirit of Beren, at her bidding, tarried in the halls of Mandos, unwilling to leave the world, until Luthien came to say her last farewell upon the dim shores of the outer sea, whence men that die set out never to return. But the spirit of Luthien fell down into darkness, and at the last it fled, and her body lay like a flower that is suddenly cut off and lies for a while unwithered on the grass. Then a winter, as it were the hoar age of mortal men, fell upon Thingol. But Luthien came to the halls of Mandos, where are the appointed places of the Eldalia, beyond the mansions of the west upon the confines of the world. There those that wait sit in the shadow of their thought. But her beauty was more than their beauty, and her sorrow deeper than their sorrows. And she knelt before Mandos and sang to him. The song of Luthien before Mandos was the song most fair that ever in words was woven, and the song most sorrowful that ever the world shall hear. Unchanged, imperishable, it is sung still in Valinor beyond the hearing of the world, and listening, the Valar are grieved. For Luthien wove two themes of words, of the sorrow of the Eldar and the grief of men, of the two kindreds that were made by Ilúvatar to dwell in Arda, the kingdom of Earth, amid the innumerable stars. And as she knelt before him, her tears fell upon his feet like rain upon the stones, and Mandos was moved to pity, who never before was so moved, nor has been since. Therefore he summoned Beren, and even as Luthien had spoken in the hour of his death, they met again beyond the western sea. But Mandos had no power to withhold the spirits of men that were dead within the confines of the world after their time of waiting. Nor could he change the fates of the children of Ilúvatar. He went therefore to Manwë, lord of the Valar, who governed the world under the hand of Ilúvatar, and Manwë sought counsel in his inmost thought, where the will of Ilúvatar was revealed. These were the choices that he gave to Luthien. Because of her labors and her sorrow, she should be released from Mandos and go to Valimar, there to dwell until the world's end among the Valar, forgetting all griefs that her life had known. Thither Beren could not come, for it was not permitted to the Valar to withhold death from him, which is the gift of Ilúvatar to men. But the other choice was this, that she might return to Middle-earth and take with her Beren, there to dwell again, but without certitude of life or joy. Then she would become mortal and subject to a second death, even as he. And ere long she would leave the world forever, and her beauty become only a memory in song. This doom she chose, forsaking the blessed realm, and putting aside all claim to kinship with those that dwell there, that thus, whatever grief might lie in wait, the fates of Beren and Luthien might be joined, and their paths lead together beyond the confines of the world. So it was that alone of the Eldalir, she has died, indeed, and left the world long ago. Yet in her choice, the two kindreds have been joined, and she is the forerunner of many in whom the Eldar see yet, though all the world is changed, the likeness of Luthien the Beloved, whom they have lost. Of the fifth battle, near Neath Arnoidiad. It is said that Beren and Luthien returned to the northern lands of Middle-earth, and dwelt together for a time as living man and woman, and they took up again their mortal form in Doriath. Those that saw them were both glad and fearful, and Luthien went to Menegroth and healed the winter of Thingol with the touch of her hand. But Melian looked in her eyes and read the doom that was written there and turned away, for she knew that a parting beyond the end of the world had come between them, and no grief of loss has been heavier than the grief of Melian the Maia in that hour. Then Beren and Luthien went forth alone, fearing neither thirst nor hunger, and they passed beyond the river Gelion into Osiriand, and dwelt there in Tol Garlan, the Green Isle, in the midst of Adurant, until all tidings of them ceased. The Eldar afterwards called that country Dorfin Irguinar, the land of the dead that live. And there was born Dior Aranel the Beautiful, who was after known as Dior Eluchil, which is Thingol's heir. No mortal man spoke ever again with Beren, son of Barahir, and none saw Beren or Luthien leave the world, or marked where at last their bodies lay. In those days, Maedhros, son of Feanor, lifted up his heart, perceiving that Morgoth was not unassailable, for the deeds of Beren and Lúthien were sung in many songs throughout Beleriand. Yet Morgoth would destroy them all, one by one, if they could not again unite and make new league and common council, and he began those councils for the raising of the fortunes of the Eldar that are called the Union of Maedhros. Yet the oath of Feanor and the evil deeds that it had wrought did injury to the design of Maedhros, and he had less aid than should have been. Orodreth would not march forth at the word of any son of Feanor, because of the deeds of Celegorm and Curufin, and the elves of Nargothrond trusted still to defend their hidden stronghold by secrecy and stealth. Thence came only a small company, following Gwyndor, son of Gwilin, a very valiant prince, and against the will of Orodreth, he went to the northern war, because he grieved for the loss of Gelmir, his brother, in the Dagor Bragollach. They took the badge of the house of Fingolfin, and marched beneath the banners of Fingon, and they came never back save one. From Doriath came little help, for Maedhros and his brothers, being constrained by their oath, had before sent to Thingol and reminded him with haughty words of their claim, summoning him to yield the Silmaril or become their enemy. Melian counselled him to surrender it, but the words of the sons of Feanor were proud and threatening, and Thingol was filled with anger, thinking of the anguish of Lúthien and the blood of Beren, whereby the jewel had been won, despite the malice of Celegorm and Curufin. And every day that he looked upon the Silmaril, the more he desired to keep it forever, for such was its power. Therefore he sent back the messengers with scornful words. Maedhros made no answer, for he had now begun to devise the league and union of the elves. But Celegorm and Curufin vowed openly to slay Thingol and destroy his people if they came victorious from war and the jewel were not surrendered of free will. Then Thingol fortified the marches of his realm and went not to war nor any out of Doriath save Mablung and Beleg, who were unwilling to have no part in these great deeds. To them Thingol gave leave to go, so long as they served not the sons of Feanor. And they joined themselves to the host of Fingon. But Maedhros had the help of the Naugrim, both in armed force and in great store of weapons. And the smithies of Nogrod and Belagost were busy in those days. And he gathered together again all his brothers and all the people who would follow them. And the men of Bor and Ulfang were marshalled and trained for war, and they summoned yet more of their kinsfolk out of the east. Moreover, in the west, Fingon, ever the friend of Maedhros, took counsel with Himring, and in Hithlum the Noldor and the men of the house of Hador prepared for war. In the forest of Brethil, Halmir, lord of the people of Haleth, gathered his men, and they whetted their axes. But Halmir died ere the war came, and Haldir his son ruled that people, and to Gondolin also the tidings came, to Turgon the hidden king. But Maedhros made trial of his strength too soon, ere his plans were full wrought, and though the orcs were driven out of all the northward regions of Beleriand, and even Dorthonion was freed for a while, Morgoth was warned of the uprising of the Eldar and the elf friends, and took counsel against them. Many spies and workers of treason he sent forth among them, as he was the better able now to do, for the faithless men of his secret allegiance were yet deep in the secrets of the sons of Feanor. At length Maedhros, having gathered all the strength that he could of elves and men and dwarves, resolved to assault Angband from east and west, and he purposed to march with banners displayed in open force over and Fauglith. But when he had drawn forth, as he hoped, the armies of Morgoth in answer, then Fingon should issue forth from the passes of Hithlum, and thus they thought to take the might of Morgoth as between anvil and hammer, and break it to pieces. And the signal for this was to be the firing of a great beacon in Dorthonion. On the appointed day, on the morning of midsummer, the trumpets of the Eldar greeted the rising of the sun, and in the east was raised the standard of the sons of Feanor, and in the west the standard of Fingon, High King of the Noldor. Then Fingon looked out from the walls of Aethel Sirion, and his host was arrayed in the valleys and the woods upon the east of Ered Wethrin, well hid from the eyes of the enemy. But he knew that it was very great. For there all the Noldor of Hithlum were assembled, together with elves of the Falas and Gwyndor's company from Norgothrond, and he had great strength of men. Upon the right were the host of Dor Lomin, and all the valour of Húrin and Húor, his brother, and to them had come Haldir of Brethil, with many men of the woods. Then Fingon looked towards Than Gorodrim, and there was a dark cloud about it, and the black smoke went up, and he knew that the wrath of Morgoth was aroused, and that their challenge was accepted. A shadow of doubt fell upon Fingon's heart, and he looked eastwards, seeking if he might see with elven sight the dust of Anfauglith rising beneath the hosts of Maedhros. He knew not that Maedhros was hindered in his setting forth by the guile of Uldor the Accursed, who deceived him with false warnings of assault from Angband. But now a cry went up, passing up the wind from the south, from vale to vale, and elves and men lifted their voices in wonder and joy. For unsummoned and unlooked for, Torgon had opened the leaguer of Gondolin, and was come with an army 10,000 strong, with bright mail and long swords and spears like a forest. Then when Fingon heard afar the great trumpet of Torgon, his brother, the shadow passed, and his heart was uplifted, and he shouted aloud, "Utulian Aure, Aia Eldalia, Ar Atanatari Utulian Aure." "The day has come. Behold, people of the Eldar and the fathers of men, the day has come." And all those who heard his great voice echo in the hills answered, crying, "Auta ilome!" "The night is passing." Now Morgoth, who knew much of what was done and designed by his enemies, chose his hour, and trusting in his treacherous servants to hold back Maedhros and prevent the union of his foes, he sent a force, seeming great, and yet but part of all that he had made ready, towards Hithlum. And they were clad all in dun raiment, and showed no naked steel, and thus were already far over the sands of Anfauglith, before their approach was seen. Then the hearts of the Noldor grew hot, and their captains wished to assail their foes upon the plain. But Húrin spoke against it, and bade them beware of the guile of Morgoth, whose strength was always greater than it seemed, and his purpose other than he revealed. And though the signal of the approach of Maedhros came not, and the host grew impatient, Húrin urged them still to await it, and to let the orcs break themselves in assault upon the hills. But the captain of Morgoth in the west had been commanded to draw out Fingon swiftly from his hills by whatever means he could. He marched on, therefore, until the front of his battle was drawn up before the stream of Sirion, from the walls of the fortress of Aethel Sirion to the inflowing of Rivil at the fen of Serech. And the outposts of Fingon could see the eyes of their enemies, but there was no answer to his challenge, and the taunts of the orcs faltered as they looked upon the silent walls and the hidden threat of the hills. Then the captain of Morgoth sent out riders with tokens of parley, and they rode up before the outworks of the Barad Aethel. With them they brought Gelmir, son of Gwilin, that lord of Nargothrond whom they had captured in the Bragolach, and they had blinded him. Then the heralds of Angband showed him forth, crying, "We have many more such at home, but you must make haste if you would find them, for we shall deal with them all when we return, even so." and they hewed off Gelmir's hands and feet and his head last, within sight of the elves, and left him. By ill chance, at that place in the outworks, stood Gwyndor of Nargothrond, the brother of Gelmir. Now his wrath was kindled to madness, and he leapt forth on horseback, and many riders with him, and they pursued the heralds and slew them, and drove on deep into the main host. And seeing this, all the host of the Noldor was set on fire, and Fingon put on his white helm, and sounded his trumpets, and all the host of Hithlum leapt forth from the hills in sudden onslaught. The light of the drawing of the swords of the Noldor was like a fire in a field of reeds, and so fell and swift was their onset, that almost the designs of Morgoth went astray. Before the army that he had sent westward could be strengthened, it was swept away, and the banners of Fingon passed over Anfauglith and were raised before the walls of Angband. Ever in the forefront of that battle went Gwyndor and the elves of Nargothrond, and even now they could not be restrained. And they burst through the gate and slew the guards upon the very stairs of Angband, and Morgoth trembled upon his deep throne, hearing them beat upon his doors. But they were trapped there, and all were slain, save Gwyndor only, whom they took alive, for Fingon could not come to their aid. By many secret doors in Thangorodrim, Morgoth had let issue forth his main host that he held in waiting, and Fingon was beaten back with great loss from the walls. Then, in the plain of Anfauglith, on the fourth day of the war, there began, near Naeth Anoediad, unnumbered tears, for no song or tale can contain all its grief. The host of Fingon retreated over the sands, and Haldir, lord of the Haladin, was slain in the rearguard. With him fell most of the men of Brethil, and came never back to their woods. But on the fifth day, as night fell, and they were still far from Ered Wethrin, the orcs surrounded the host of Hithlum, and they fought until day, pressed ever closer. In the morning came hope, when the horns of Turgon were heard as he marched up with the main host of Gondolin. For they had been stationed southward guarding the pass of Sirion, and Turgon restrained most of his people from the rash onslaught. Now he hastened to the aid of his brother, and the Gondolindrim were strong and clad in mail, and their ranks shone like a river of steel in the sun. Now the phalanx of the guard of the king broke through the ranks of the orcs, and Turgon hewed his way to the side of his brother. And it is told that the meeting of Turgon with Húrin, who stood beside Fingon, was glad in the midst of battle. Then hope was renewed in the hearts of the elves, and in that very time, at the third hour of morning, the trumpets of Maedhros were heard at last coming up from the east, and the banners of the sons of Feanor assailed the enemy in the rear. Some have said that even then the Eldar might have won the day, had all their hosts proved faithful, for the orcs wavered, and their onslaught was stayed, and already some were turning to flight. But even as the vanguard of Maedhros came upon the orcs, Morgoth loosed his last strength, and Angband was emptied. There came wolves and wolf-riders, and there came Balrogs and dragons, and Glaurung, father of dragons. The strength and terror of the great worm were now great indeed, and elves and men withered before him. And he came between the hosts of Maedhros and Fingon, and swept them apart. Yet neither by wolf, nor by Balrog, nor by dragon would Morgoth have achieved his end, but for the treachery of men. In this hour the plots of Ulfang were revealed. Many of the Easterlings turned and fled, their hearts being filled with lies and fear. But the sons of Ulfang went over suddenly to Morgoth, and drove in upon the rear of the sons of Feanor, and in the confusion that they wrought, they came near to the standard of Maedhros. They reaped not the reward that Morgoth promised them, for Maglor slew Uldor the Accursed, the leader in treason, and the sons of Bor slew Ulfast and Ulwath, ere they themselves were slain. But new strength of evil men came up that Uldor had summoned and kept hidden in the eastern hills, and the host of Maedhros was assailed now on three sides, and it broke, and was scattered and fled this way and that. Yet fate saved the sons of Feanor, and though all were wounded, none were slain, for they drew together, and gathering a remnant of the Noldor and the Naugrim about them, they hewed a way out of the battle and escaped far away towards Mount Dolmed in the east. Last of all, the eastern force to stand firm were the dwarves of Belegost, and thus they won renown. For the Naugrim withstood fire more hardily than either elves or men, and it was their custom, moreover, to wear great masks in battle, hideous to look upon, and those stood them in good stead against the dragons. And but for them, Glaurung and his brood would have withered all that was left of the Noldor. But the Naugrim made a circle about him when he assailed them, and even his mighty armor was not full proof against the blows of their great axes. And when, in his rage, Glaurung turned and struck down Azaghal, lord of Belagost, and crawled over him, with his last stroke, Azaghal drove a knife into his belly, and so wounded him that he fled the field, and the beasts of Angband, in dismay, followed after him. Then the dwarves raised up the body of Azaghal and bore it away, and with slow steps they walked behind, singing a dirge in deep voices, as it were a funeral pomp in their country, and gave no heed more to their foes, and none dared to stay them. But now in the western battle, Fingon and Turgon were assailed by a tide of foes thrice greater than all the force that was left to them. Gothmog, lord of Balrog's high captain of Angband, was come, and he drove a dark wedge between the elven hosts, surrounding King Fingon and thrusting Turgon and Húrin aside towards the fen of Serech. Then he turned upon Fingon. That was a grim meeting. At last Fingon stood alone with his guard dead about him, and he fought with Gothmog, until another Balrog came behind and cast a thong of fire about him. Then Gothmog hewed him with his black axe, and a white flame sprang up from the helm of Fingon as it was cloven. Thus fell the High King of the Noldor, and they beat him into the dust with their maces, and his banner, blue and silver, they trod into the mire of his blood. The field was lost. But still Húrin and Húor and the remnants of the House of Hador stood firm with Turgon of Gondolin, and the hosts of Morgoth could not yet win the pass of Sirion. Then Húrin spoke to Turgon, saying, "Go now, lord, while time is, for in you lives the last hope of the Eldar, and while Gondolin stands, Morgoth shall still know fear in his heart." But Turgon answered, "Not long now can Gondolin be hidden, and being discovered, it must fall." Then Húor spoke and said, "Yet if it stands but a little while, then out of your house shall come the hope of elves and men. This I say to you, lord, with the eyes of death, though we part here for ever, and I shall not look on your white walls again, from you and from me a new star shall arise. Farewell." And Meiglin, Turgon's sister's son, who stood by, heard these words and did not forget them. But he said nothing. Then Turgon took the counsel of Húrin and Húor, and summoning all that remained of the host of Gondolin, and such of Fingon's people as could be gathered, he retreated towards the pass of Sirion. And his captains, Ecthelion and Glorfindel, guarded the flanks to right and left, so that none of the enemy should pass them by. But the men of Dor Lomin held the rear guard as Húrin and Húor desired, for they did not wish in their hearts to leave the Northlands. And if they could not win back to their homes, there they would stand to the end. Thus was the treachery of Uldor redressed, and of all the deeds of war that the fathers of men wrought in behalf of the Eldar, the last stand of the men of Dor Lomin is most renowned. So it was that Turgon fought his way southward, until coming behind the guard of Hurin and Huor, he passed down Sirion and escaped. And he vanished into the mountains and was hidden from the eyes of Morgoth. But the brothers drew the remnants of the men of the house of Hador about them, and foot by foot they withdrew, until they came behind the fen of Serech, and had the stream of Rivil before them. There they stood, and gave way no more. Then all the hosts of Angban swarmed against them, and they bridged the stream with their dead, and encircled the remnant of Hithlum as a gathering tide about a rock. There, as the sun westered on the sixth day, and the shadow of Ered Wethrin grew dark, Huor fell, pierced with a venomed arrow in his eye, and all the valiant men of Hador were slain about him in a heap. And the orcs hewed their heads and piled them as a mound of gold in the sunset. Last of all, Hurin stood alone. Then he cast aside his shield and wielded an axe two-handed, and it is sung that the axe smoked in the black blood of the troll god of Gothmog until it withered. And each time that he slew, Hurin cried,
Aure and Tulava! Day shall come again!
70 times he uttered that cry, but they took him at last alive by the command of Morgoth. For the orcs grappled him with their hands, which clung to him still, though he hewed off their arms. And ever their numbers were renewed, until at last he fell buried beneath them. Then Gothmog bound him and dragged him to Angband with mockery. Thus ended Nirneath Arnoidiad, as the sun went down beyond the sea. Night fell in Hithlum, and there came a great storm of wind out of the west. Great was the triumph of Morgoth, and his design was accomplished in a manner after his own heart, for men took the lives of men, and betrayed the Eldar, and fear and hatred were aroused among those that should have been united against him. From that day the hearts of the elves were estranged from men, save only those of the three houses of the Edain. The realm of Fingon was no more, and the sons of Feanor wandered as leaves before the wind. Their arms were scattered and their league broken, and they took to a wild and woodland life beneath the feet of Ered Lindon, mingling with the green elves of Ossiriand, bereft of their power and glory of old. In Brethil, some few of the Haladin yet dwelt in the protection of their woods, and Handir, son of Haldir, was their lord. But to Hithlum came back never one of Fingon's host, nor any of the men of Hador's house, nor any tidings of the battle and the fate of their lords. But Morgoth sent thither the Easterlings that had served him, denying them the rich lands of Beleriand which they coveted, and he shut them in Hithlum and forbade them to leave it. Such was the reward he gave them for their treachery to Maedhros, to plunder and harass the old and the women and the children of Hador's people. The remnant of the Eldar of Hithlum were taken to the mines of the north and labored there as thralls, save some that eluded him and escaped into the wilds and the mountains. The orcs and the wolves went freely through all the north and came ever further southward into Beleriand, even as far as Nantathrin, the land of the willows, and the borders of Ossiriand, and none were safe in field or wild. Doriath indeed remained, and the halls of Nargothrond were hidden. But Morgoth gave small heed to them, either because he knew little of them, or because their hour was not yet come in the deep purpose of his malice. Many now fled to the havens and took refuge behind Cerdan's walls, and the mariners passed up and down the coast and harried the enemy with swift landings. But in the next year, ere the winter was come, Morgoth sent great strength over Hithlum and Nevrast, and they came down the rivers Brython and Nenning, and ravaged all the Falas, and besieged the walls of Brithombar and Eglarest. Smiths and miners and makers of fire they brought with them, and they set up great engines, and valiantly though they were resisted, they broke the walls at last. Then the havens were laid in ruin, and the tower of Barad Nimras cast down, and the most part of Círdan's people were slain or enslaved. But some went aboard ship and escaped by sea, and among them was Iranian Gil-galad, the son of Fingon, whom his father had sent to the havens after the Dagor Bragolach. This remnant sailed with Círdan south to the Isle of Balar, and they made a refuge for all that could come thither, for they kept a foothold also at the mouths of Sirion, and there many light and swift ships lay hid in the creeks and waters where the reeds were dense as a forest. And when Torgon heard of this, he sent again his messengers to Sirion's mouths, and besought the aid of Círdan the shipwright. At the bidding of Torgon, Círdan built 7 swift ships, and they sailed out into the west. But no tidings of them came ever back to Balar, save of one, and the last. The mariners of that ship toiled long in the sea, and returning at last in despair, they foundered in a great storm within sight of the coasts of Middle-earth. But one of them was saved by Ulmo from the wrath of Ossa, and the waves bore him up and cast him ashore in Nevrast. His name was Varonwe, and he was one of those that Torgon sent forth as messengers from Gondolin. Now the thought of Morgoth dwelt ever upon Torgon. For Torgon had escaped him. Of all his foes, that one whom he most desired to take or to destroy. And that thought troubled him and marred his victory. For Torgon of the mighty house of Fingolfin was now by right king of all the Noldor, and Morgoth feared and hated the house of Fingolfin because they had the friendship of Ulmo, his foe, and because of the wounds that Fingolfin gave him with his sword. And most of all his kin, Morgoth feared Torgon. For of old in Valinor his eye had lighted upon him, and whenever he drew near a shadow had fallen on his spirit, foreboding that in some time that yet lay hidden from Torgon ruin should come to him. Therefore Húrin was brought before Morgoth, for Morgoth knew that he had the friendship of the king of Gondolin. But Húrin defied him and mocked him. Then Morgoth cursed Húrin and Morwen and their offspring, and set a doom upon them of darkness and sorrow. And taking Húrin from prison, he set him in a chair of stone upon a high place of Thangorodrim. There he was bound by the power of Morgoth. And Morgoth, standing beside him, cursed him again, and he said, "Sit now there, and look out upon the lands where evil and despair shall come upon those whom thou lovest. Thou hast dared to mock me, and to question the power of Melkor, master of the fates of Arda. Therefore, with my eyes thou shalt see, and with my ears thou shalt hear, and never shalt thou move from this place until all is fulfilled unto its bitter end." And even so it came to pass. But it is not said that Húrin asked ever of Morgoth either mercy or death, for himself or for any of his kin. By the command of Morgoth, the orcs with great labor gathered all the bodies of those who had fallen in the great battle, and all their harness and weapons, and piled them in a great mound in the midst of Anfauglith. And it was like a hill that could be seen from afar. Hauðin Ndengin, the elves named it, the Hill of Slain. And Hauðin Nirnaeth, the Hill of Tears. But grass came there and grew again long and green upon that hill, alone in all the desert that Morgoth made. And no creature of Morgoth trod thereafter upon the earth beneath which the swords of the Eldar and the Edain crumbled into rust.